Jefferson goes in motion, second and goal from the two. Hand off Adrian, up the middle, to the goal line, to the end zone, touchdown! And that's Adrian Peterson's first touchdown since November 24th of 2013 at Lambeau Field. Rivers out of the shotgun, third and 10 from his own 20. Gets the snap, steps up in the pocket, gets away from the pressure. Ball's hit! It's a fumble! Andy was hit by Anthony Barr. Ball popped out. We're still waiting.
Hey, Vikings ball.
Vikings ball deep in Chargers territory. Way to go, Anthony Barr. Hand off Zach Line. Touchdown, Vikings! Zach Line is on fire. Touchdowns in successive weeks. Rivers back to pass. He's sacked and he's crushed by Everson Griffin, who's dominating San Diego.
Welcome back. It's another edition of the Wobcast. I'm your host, Mike Wobshaw, coming to you from Xfinity Studios at Winter Park. Producer Nate Vaughn is here, and we apologize for the delay. We're coming to you a little bit later than we normally do in the week, but we were tallying up all of the Vikings hits on quarterbacks through the first three games, and it just took a little bit longer than we expected. So we're a little bit delayed on posting the early week Wobcast, but here we are. And here we are to talk about your 2-1 Minnesota Vikings. They're 2-1 because they've won two consecutive games after dropping the season opener against the San Francisco 49ers, their most recent win. Of course, a 31-14 throttling of the San Diego Chargers, a game San Diego Chargers squad that played tough and hung in there, but that was just overwhelmed by a Vikings team that played well in all three phases. The Vikings special teams group continues to be solid in all phases. The Vikings are able to run the ball at will, or at least they have been over the last 2 weeks, and the Vikings defense has been overwhelming offensive lines and swarming quarterbacks. It's all led to two consecutive wins and a 2-1 record for the Purple as they head into Week 4 and their game against the Denver Broncos in Denver on Sunday. And so we look at some of the highlights from the Vikings win over the San Diego Chargers, and let's start with Adrian Peterson, who ran wild.
Tight ends left and right, handoff Adrian Peterson. He gets out to the right side, stiff arms a Charger at the 40. Adrian's to the 30, heads to the left of the 20, shakes the tackle, and is a loose! Inside the 5, touchdown! 43-yard touchdown by Adrian Peterson, the 93rd of his career, tying him with Randy Moss for second most in team history and running the Vikings to a 16-7 lead.
When the day was done, Adrian Peterson, 20 carries, 126 yards, and two touchdowns. That is two consecutive 100-yard games for your MVP running back. Adrian Peterson is back, and he is in the form we love to see him in, displaying all sorts of talents and skill sets and abilities. He's running through people. He's running around people. He's running past people, and that offensive line is doing a great job of paving the way for him. But the story of the game against the San Diego Chargers, very similar to what it was the week prior against the Detroit Lions, it is the Vikings defense, a throwback type of defense, overwhelming and swarming the San Diego Chargers last Sunday.
Is containing the run, again, the hallmark of what you need to do to kind of set up the rest of your defense, Mike? We've seen that 2 weeks in a row now.
It is important to be able to do that. I know that our guys are starting to take a lot of pride. You know, they came out in a three tight end set, you know, which we have seen before. And it was good that we shut it down early. And, you know, it's about a mindset and about physicality and about toughness and all the things really that I try to preach every single day. But when you can stop the run, then eventually you can lay your ears back.
Phillip in his 12th year from North Carolina State. Eric Kendricks cheats up to the line, then backs off. Rivers steps up, pumps, hit, and sacked. Phillip just hoists the white flag. Everson Griffin, Sharif Floyd, several in on the sack. Floyd will be credited with the sack. That's the Vikings' fourth today. And Phillip Rivers, one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, has been sacked 10 times this season.
It's 2 weeks in a row that you beat up the opposing quarterback pretty good. Is that a little bit of the mentality that you talk about, just to make sure that they know they come in here, they're going to leave here bruised?
Well, we want to hit the quarterback as many times as we can. That's for sure. We want to do it legally. We want to do it in the right target area, which for the most part, you know, I think we got one today. But in the last 2 weeks, we've hit these guys a few times, but we've hit them clean. And, you know, I think the hit that Barr put on him there in the third quarter, I think that had a toll on him. You know, with these great quarterbacks, the more they're under duress, the more difficult it is for them.
Is this one of those games that's fun for you as a defensive play caller? I mean, it seems like you're able to dig pretty deep into your blitz playbook there, just considering how much they were spread out and the fact that you guys decided to attack them like that.
It's never really fun for me, to be honest with you. We have quite a few blitzes left in the package if we need them, but I felt like today it was important that we went after this quarterback. I did not want him to sit in there and throw the football. So we decided that we were either going to get the ball out of his hands or we're going to hit him. And I think we hit him a few times today.
It's funny. It's a passing league nowadays in the NFL. But the Vikings in their last two victories, it's been all about the running game. It's been about running the ball on offense and stopping the run on defense. Not many teams in the NFL have been better in either phase than the Vikings over the past 2 weeks, and the ability to do that is certainly not lost on Mike Zimmer. He wants his team to be physical in the run game. But another area where the Vikings have been physical is in hitting the opposing quarterback.
You're starting to establish your identity of what you want with this football team, with the way you're able to get after quarterbacks and stop the run, and then the physicality you ran with, Peterson ran with on offense.
Well, I do like the physical nature of our team the last couple weeks. You know, football's been around so long, and you know, it always comes down to physical game at the end. So I want us to continue that way. I hope that is our identity going forward. But, you know, we'll see. We still got a long way to go.
It's a common theme from Vikings head coach Mike Zimmer. He doesn't talk about winning by a certain number of points or winning with style. What he talks about all the time is wanting his team to A, get better every single week, constantly improve, and B, play with physicality, play with aggression, play smart, and play fast. And it's on repeat at all of his press conferences, but it's an important message for his team. And right now, his team is taking up that identity, and it's a lot of fun to watch. One last thing before we move on to previewing Vikings and Broncos, the special teams. And they're performing well in a lot of different areas right now, but I want to highlight the punt team. Jeff Locke and the punt team, the punt coverage team, they've allowed 2 punt return yards on the entire season. Outstanding job by the Vikings punt team, and I credit everyone from punter Jeff Locke, who has 7 punts inside the 20 with 0 touchbacks on the season, to the coverage team, who's running down there underneath Jeff Locke's punts and covering receivers with abandon. They're doing a great job, and it's fun to watch Mike Prefer's group play that well. Now, don't fret about the passing game. Here's why. Teddy Bridgewater's numbers, no, they are not gaudy, but they are exactly what the Vikings have needed over the past 2 weeks. With Adrian Peterson and the ground game going like it is, Norv Turner and company have not asked Teddy Bridgewater and the passing game to air it out, and that's why you haven't seen the gaudy numbers. It's not because they're incapable of doing so. Furthermore, there was a drop touchdown pass on Sunday, and had that pass been caught, you probably wouldn't have seen the interception that resulted on the next play. Throw in a one-play touchdown drive in the second half, throw in a pick six from Chad Greenway, and the offense just was not on the field very much in the second half, and the passing game didn't have much of an opportunity to show its true colors because the Vikings had a huge lead and did not have many offensive snaps in the second half. So, nope, the gaudy numbers, not there yet, but nothing to fret about. The passing game has done exactly what's been asked of it so far. So there's the update from the Vikings' victory over the Chargers. Let's talk about the rest of the NFC North and bring in producer Nate Vaughn. Hi, Nate.
Hi, Wabi. How are you?
I'm good, man.
You know, I'm still working on counting all those hits on opposing quarterbacks. Oh, okay. I think we're a little bit closer, but, you know, it's still a work in progress.
Again, we're sorry we're late. We're posting the Wobcast a little bit later, earlier in the week than we normally do, but, man, there's been a lot of quarterback hits. It takes a long time to tally them up.
It does. Speaking of quarterback hits, a starting quarterback that was out this past week, Jay Cutler of the Chicago Bears. That's right. The first team we'll look at in the NFC North. We're handed a 26-0 defeat. Mm-hmm. To the hands of the Seattle Seahawks, shut out for just the first time since 2002. Wow. Was Chicago.
When they were playing in Champaign, Illinois, because Soldier Field was being renovated. So they were playing on a college campus.
Right, right. Yeah. The score was only 6-0 at halftime, so they were keeping it close. They kept it close against the Packers in week one.
Yeah.
But second half, things got a little bit out of hand, and there's been some action in the front office now this week.
They trade Jared Allen to the Carolina Panthers. They trade linebacker John Bostic to the New England Patriots, and they waive safety Brock Vereen, who played at the University of Minnesota. So you're right, lots of action going on the waiver and transaction wire for the Chicago Bears. And with a first-year head coach and a season that has not gotten off on the right foot for the Bears, you can see why they're starting to make changes. They're probably thinking long-term and trying to set themselves up for the future, not laying down and giving up on the season. Certainly, you don't do that in the NFL, and I don't think the Bears are doing that. But you know, they have also discovered that they want to make these moves to better the team down the road. So you have to respect them for doing that. Tough, tough situation for the Bears to go into Seattle with the Seahawks starting the season 0-2 and certainly angry. And I believe that was their home opener, too. I think they were on the road for their first two games at St. Louis and then at Green Bay. So the 0-2 Seattle Seahawks return home for their home opener to play a Chicago Bears team that is without Jay Cutler and that is without Alshon Jeffrey. So, I mean, you can certainly see why that game got left-handed. I don't look at that game and think that the Bears are easy pickings. I think John Fox will get that group heading all in the right direction, and they'll be playing better very soon.
So the Bears now 0-3, hosting the Raiders at 2-1,
yeah,
playing host to the Raiders at 2-1 next week. We'll move on to the Detroit Lions, who took on our opponent this week, the Denver Broncos. The Lions fell to the Broncos 24-12, kept it close. It was 14-12 in the third quarter. But in the end, the Denver Broncos were a little too much for the Detroit Lions.
Yeah, and, you know, we saw some of the same issues that the Lions had against us in their game against Denver. Matthew Stafford getting pressured a little bit. And the Lions are another team that I don't rule out either. I understand that they're 0-3 and everyone pretty much discounts 0-3 teams, but we're going to see that team again, and we're actually going to see them again. We're going to play Detroit twice before we play any other NFC North team. So we can't discount them. We've got to keep our eye on them. You know, I was impressed with Denver. You can look at this one of two ways. The Denver Broncos played Thursday night against the Kansas City Chiefs on the road and then didn't play until Sunday night, you know, so they had a longer layoff. Is that good for you because you get rest, or is that bad for you because you get rusty? I think early in the season, you don't need the rest as much as you might later in the season. So, the Denver Broncos do a good job of avoiding, coming out rusty or coming out not very sharp, and they go on the road and get a victory over the Lions. Anytime you win on the road, that is a huge credit to your team for the way you prepare and the way you play and your toughness. Road victories are tough in the NFL. It doesn't matter what the matchup is. The Broncos got a road victory, and so they're going to be in a good mood, and they have some momentum for this week's game against us.
So the Lions fall to 0-3, traveling to Seattle. Now 1-2 for another primetime game next week on Monday night.
Monday Night Football, I see. Okay. Well, you know, Seattle's a tough team to beat in Seattle. We discussed that with the Bears, but the Lions have some firepower on offense, so that'll be kind of a cool matchup to watch that offense go against that defense. If the Lions can protect, I think it'll be fun to watch Megatron and Golden Tate and Matthew Stafford challenge that Seahawks secondary, which now features Cam Chancellor, who has ended his holdout and is back in the lineup for the Seahawks.
And as you mentioned, Denver playing host to your Minnesota Vikings.
Correct.
Next week. The final team, Green Bay, another win in primetime for the Green Bay Packers, 38-28 against Kansas City.
In a rematch of Super Bowl I, which is kind of cool. The NFL is featuring a lot of Super Bowl rematches this year because it's the 50th anniversary of the beginning of the Super Bowl. Aaron Rodgers, yeah.
This just in. He's okay.
He good. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers knows what he's doing. You know, I think with Aaron Rodgers, you have a dilemma on do you play coverage against him because he's so good against the blitz, so you play coverage on him and try and contain him. Or do you say, we're not going to let him stand back there all day and throw it. We're going to blitz him, and now you run the risk of being burned by him. That's the dilemma that every defensive coordinator, defensive-minded head coach faces when they go and play the Green Bay Packers. Aaron Rodgers is good no matter where he plays, but he's really good at home. I mean, really good at home. The last time Aaron Rodgers was intercepted at Lambeau Field, 2012, and it was Harrison Smith. An unbelievable streak there for Aaron Rodgers, one that whenever it ends, whatever the number is, whether it's pass attempts or games since his last interception at home, like that. That's one that I could see never being broken again. I mean, that's an unbelievable streak by Aaron Rodgers. Long story longer, Green Bay's good. They're 3-0. Obviously, because they're our division opponent, we hope they lose. We don't want Green Bay to win. It would be interesting, though, to host an undefeated Green Bay Packers and see if you can be the team to knock them off.
So the Packers now 3-0. They're going to San Francisco. San Francisco's 1-2 next week.
They've had trouble historically against Colin Kaepernick. Now, I'm not saying they're going to struggle next week against Colin Kaepernick, but that's traditionally been a player who's played well against Green Bay. Let's hope the tradition continues.
Speaking of a tradition continuing.
A tradition unlike any other.
You, yourself, breaking the tradition a little bit.
Aha.
An impressive showing from you in the over-unders last week.
Like Coach Zimmer wants, I'm getting better every week.
One game at a time. It's good that you're keeping a level head.
Thank you.
So, well,
thank you.
The first thing we took at was Viking sacks. We put the over-under at 1.5. We knew getting pressure on Phillip Rivers was going to be a big part of the game plan. Looks like it might be a big part of the game plan every week for this defense.
Yep.
So we were hoping that we'd take the over. You took the over at 1.5. Looks like you were right. Yeah. Just a few more than 1.5.
I was right like threefold.
You were.
We got after Phillip Rivers, and it was good to see. You know, I thought against San Francisco that Vikings team was unrecognizable. I mean, it was, we wanted to be a team that pushed people around at the line of scrimmage, and we didn't do that. We got pushed around, but man, has this team responded in week two and week three against the Detroit Lions and San Diego Chargers, and last week against the Chargers, it was even better than the week before against the Lions. The Vikings defensive line was swarming Phillip Rivers the entire day. Phillip Rivers is as tough as they come in the NFL in terms of taking hits, standing in there, throwing it, playing through injuries, all of that. And I mean, he was, you could tell that it was taking a toll on him. So if you do that to Phillip Rivers, you've been doing a good job.
5 sacks for the Vikings defense against San Diego. The second over-under we were taking a look at is Keenan Allen targets. You remember week one, he blew up. Tons of targets, tons of catches, huge game.
17 targets,
17 targets. Week two, very much the opposite. 4 targets, didn't seem to have much of an effect on the game.
Right.
So we put the over-under on 7.5 for targets in this game. He did get the over by just a few.
How many did he have?
He had 18 targets.
Oh, my, even more than week one.
Even one more than week one.
Man.
If you remember, one of those targets coming on a big play at the end of the first half.
Yeah, it was.
And another one in what a lot of people call garbage time at the end of the game. Both of those for touchdowns. So a couple big plays there that in the end didn't seem to have a huge bearing on the game.
No, I don't think it did. Keenan Allen had a great box score, but I don't think he impacted the game in a significant way, and not because of really anything he did or didn't do, just because of the Vikings pass rush getting to Phillip Rivers the way it did. As quickly as it did, Phillip just did not have time to find Keenan for significant and difference-making targets and catches when the game was still on the line. So great job by the Vikings defensive front. Now, pass defense is the combination of coverage and rush, so you give a lot of credit to the Vikings secondary and to those linebackers when they were in coverage. But, you know, the Vikings defensive line is really pacing the attack right now.
In the third over-under, we looked at game-time temperature. The forecast looked good.
Yep.
Looked like it was going to be a beautiful day. It was even more beautiful than we thought it might be. We put the over-under at 71.5 degrees. Kickoff, a balmy 75 degrees.
Now, I think I got a little flashy on this. We can go back and check the records. I think I even predicted what it would be, and I said 76 maybe, so I was off there. But I was over the number that you put out there. So I win. I'm 3-0, and I'm feeling good.
Feeling good, as you should. Now above 500.
Let's go.
In the regular season.
That's right.
A strong record of 5-4.
Yep.
Thank you.
Let's keep it moving.
So congratulations to you, Wobby.
Thank you. More over-unders to come in the next episode of the Wobcast, right?
That's correct. Right. That's correct. We're going to keep them coming.
Yeah.
Unless you keep getting them all right, and then we might just
switch
stop.
To a different game. Yeah, thanks a lot.
Before we take a sneak peek at the Denver Broncos, Wobby, you sat down with Lester Bagley earlier today and talked a little bit about some of the developments surrounding the Vikings organization as a whole.
Yeah, Lester is a big football guy. He's a football fan, and he knows a lot about the game. But Lester handles a lot of stuff off the field. He's in charge of a lot of our stadium development, and he's in charge of the project where the Vikings may have a new practice facility in Eagan. He's in charge of our public relations, of our media relations, of what we do out in the community. He has his hand from a leadership role in all of those topics. So it was fun to sit him down while the football team is playing well and there's lots to talk about, to mix it up a little bit and talk about the Vikings off the field, talk about U.S. Bank Stadium, and talk about some of the business initiatives that the club is facing right now. So it was an interesting conversation to have with him. We thank him for his time because he's very busy, but he's a fun guy to have around and he's a fun guy to talk to. Here to break down the double A-gap blitz is Vikings Executive Vice President Lester Bagley. Lester, your thoughts on the double A-gap blitz?
Wait a second, Wobby. I'm not ready for that question.
Yeah, you're ready for everything. Yeah, you have all the answers to everything.
I could give a 15-second answer that people wouldn't understand. But.
Okay. Well, let's give everyone something that they do understand because they're excited about it, and that's U.S. Bank Stadium. So we get updates periodically. We're 25% of the way through. We're 40%. Where are we right now?
Well, now we're 75%.
All right.
So we are home stretch, three quarters of the way through the project. It's going to be, as we know, a beautiful stadium, a signature element on our skyline, the best fan experience in the league, the most technologically advanced. But in terms of timeline, we got 12 to 1,400 construction workers on site every day. We're working to enclose the stadium by November. That means the ETFE product on the roof will be finished, and they'll kind of board up or close off the west end. And then the last 10 months, which we've got about 10 months to go, last 9 or 10 months, they'll be working hard to finish the interior.
Speaking of working hard, you and a lot of people on the Vikings end and on the city's end and on the state's end worked really hard to get this project off the ground and get it going. And now you're as far as you are in the whole process. You office at Winter Park in Eden Prairie, but do you want to schedule meetings downtown on purpose just so you can go there and look at it? Because it looks great so far.
No, it is awesome. And we do we have the great preview center and the sales and marketing offices, and we do have a guest office that I get to use. So down there a couple days a week. And, it's exciting to be there. The energy, not just the building, but everything that's happening around the building, all the development that's occurring that this new U.S. Bank Stadium was a catalyst for. So, yeah, it's exciting. It's fun to be down there. It's great to take people through tours. We had a bunch of legislators there, even those who voted against it, who are very impressed with the building. We had 62 mayors come through throughout Minnesota for a Super Bowl event and tour, and just people from all over and all walks are just very excited about this facility.
Cool. I want to go inside stadium business right now and ask you a very specific question. The pivoting glass doors. Talk a little bit about that, about the genesis of that idea and why that's a unique feature of the stadium and what it means to the whole stadium experience.
Well, and we looked hard at, first of all, we talked about location. We went everywhere. We looked under every rock, every corner of the Twin Cities Metro, and then kind of came back to the Metrodome site, which in hindsight is the best site, is the most cost-efficient site, best infrastructure, light rail stop. But once we settled on the location and the partnership between the Vikings, the state, and the city, then we zeroed in on the design, and we did debate whether or not we should have a retractable roof. And just, I think the conclusion, given our climate and the fact that even Indianapolis, they open theirs two or three times maybe per season. So we just decided to look at a different version. So we came up with and HKS Architects came up with the proposal to do this ETFE, the 60% clear roof combined with the pivoting doors. And those pivoting doors, those 95 feet tall by 55 feet wide, they are the largest in the world, and the doors combined with the clear roof give us that indoor-outdoor feel, that Minnesota stadium for all seasons, and that's what we really wanted to accomplish, kind of give that indoor-outdoor feel, keep those doors open as much and as long into the season as we can, but that's sort of the genesis of where the doors evolved.
And a big part of the entire process of building this venue was to make it a versatile venue that's not just for Vikings football, but that can be used for a lot of other events, not just sporting events either. And how about those pivoting glass doors for some of those events? Like in the middle of the summer, a country music concert with those pivoting doors open, is that a possibility?
Yeah, and that's what the Twins found out at the old Metrodome and other in the stadium authority found out, is that people in July, they don't want to come in to the dome, but this, we think, with this indoor-outdoor feel, I think it'll get people People, first of all, are going to want to come into this building because it's state of the art and it's going to be outstanding. So, but getting the multi events and baseball, you know, indoor, it's going to be the finest indoor baseball stadium in the country. There's no doubt about it. A great fan experience. So there'll be all kinds of events, keeping those doors open and taking advantage of that indoor outdoor experience for to keep people rolling in for concerts, for soccer, you know, maybe international friendlies, get the English Premier League to come over and play a match. So there's some work going on that front right now. So yeah, a lot of events besides Viking football will be in that building, as you know.
But when Richard Pitino and the Gophers are playing in the Final Four, they're going to want those doors shut. The wind will mess with the shots.
Yeah, and not only that, but they're going to they have a big blackout curtain. They're going to have to, because they have to, you know, make sure that the experience, the environment, is the same. Mm-hmm. You know, at a 2 o'clock Saturday game as it is for a Monday night championship game. So, but yeah, that's obvious. That's a very important part of the NCAA's focus and selecting which stadium and which community gets the Final Four, which, as you know, we have for the 2019 Final Four.
I want to host my fantasy football draft there. Can I do that?
Well, I think you can put it on the list of requests. Okay. And you know, the Vikings get besides our 10 games plus playoffs, we get 10 additional event days, probably for our draft party, maybe for the Medtronic 5K run that kicks off the season. Other events, cheerleader tryouts, perhaps, but I'm not sure where your fantasy football draft ranks on that. But the stadium authority is also going to be renting out the Vikings Club and various other spaces in the building, which was not an option for the old Metrodome. But for this building, there's going to be a lot of people through it. There's going to be a lot of events, and but you'll probably have to take that one up with the stadium authority.
Okay, I'll do that. Another big project you're working on, U.S. Bank Stadium, is where we're going to play our games. Where we practice might be at a different location. Talk about the Egan project that you've been working on.
And this is very exciting because of what it means to our team, our players, our coaches, our front office, our staff, because this is where we live. I mean, we live, we're at Winter Park now. We live here 55 days a year. And our players are here virtually full time for 9 months of the year. So, you know, right now, Winter Park has been a great, host for the team. But it's time to kind of upgrade. And so now that we've sort of begun to turn the corner for the home stretch on the new stadium, we've turned our attention to the team headquarters and practice facility, and we found that we think an ideal location in Egan that's going to maybe triple the size of what we have here and make it state of the art and make it comfortable for our players as that very important element of where we are every day.
You know, you've been in a lot of walks of life. You've worked with a lot of leaders. Can you talk about the Wilfs a little bit? I mean, they've invested in this team so much. They've upgraded here at Winter Park. And now they've teamed with a lot of people to help build a stadium, and they're talking about Egan and some of the work that we've done with the city of Mankato for training camp. Kind of talk about what they've meant, in your opinion, to the community and to this team.
Well, they've been kind of understated. They're kind of head down. I mean, a lot of our projects have been high profile because we're the Vikings and we draw attention no matter what we do, it seems like. But they're first and foremost focused on bringing a world championship to Minnesota. And in order to do that, we wanted to upgrade our facilities, and that's the stadium investment as well as the upcoming practice facility, team headquarters investment. So, you know, they've been very focused on that. They've been very focused on community and philanthropy, both in the Northeast nationally and then for sure in Minnesota. And kind of the Vikings have stepped up our game on giving back to the community under the leadership of the Wilfs. But this new practice facility is going to our design and our vision, and the Wilfs' vision is to make it to interactive and to make it a fan experience. And so we're talking about putting a 7,000 seat football stadium there that could host Friday Night Lights, and to have an event center where we can have people and fans who want to experience at the Vikings, have them come out. We'll have to keep our football operations private because of the severe competitive nature of our business. But the facility itself, I think, is going to be very fan-friendly, very interactive, probably a Hall of Fame or some sort of Hall of Legends, and some experience where fans can touch and feel the Vikings a little bit more in our home like they want to do.
Amazing how much stuff is going on. I mean, aside from the games on the field and all of that, that is the public side of the NFL and of the Vikings, how much of that stuff that goes on behind the scenes that you deal with on a day-to-day basis, I mean, how do you keep it all straight?
Well, it's a great team effort, and we do have a great team, but we're all, you know, the NFL is not a business that just runs during the football season. As you know, it's a year-round business. It's not a five-day-a-week business. Our games are on Sunday. There's work being done on Saturday. So during the season, it's a seven-day-a-week business. In the off-season, when we're not playing, it lightens up perhaps a little bit, but we've got a ton of work, a ton of energy, a ton of events and community that we move forward on a weekly, daily basis.
And the Starkey Hearing event that's coming up.
Yeah, this is actually tomorrow at Yankee Stadium in New York. The Vikings, the Wilf family, particularly Mark and Lenny, combined with the New York Yankees, Joe Girardi and some Yankee players, Bill Austin, the CEO of Starkey Hearing, as well as Elie Wiesel, who's a Nobel Peace Prize award winner, are going to be at the Yankee Stadium to provide hearing aids to modest or low-income Holocaust survivors. So it's a reflection of Starkey's great mission and work in our community and nationally, as well as the Wilfs and their energy toward such causes. They're leaders nationally on Holocaust survivors, and this is a great way to match up those who need help with a hearing, you know, an expensive, nice hearing device to get those folks some of the comforts that we all have in society that they need. And so it's a great program, a great event, a great partnership with the Yankees, with Starkey. And that's tomorrow at Yankee Stadium. We'll probably see a little media coverage of that over the next couple of days.
Cool. That's a lot. Thanks for updating us, Lester. Appreciate that. It's amazing that you can keep all that straight, but you do a great job of it.
Thanks, Wobby. Enjoyed it. Thanks for the chance to be on today.
Now, if you want to hear more of Lester Bagley's thoughts on the Double A Gap Blitz or the West Coast offense, you can go to lesterbagley.com or follow Lester on Twitter at Lester Bagley, right? Just
no,
kidding.
No.
You can't do any of that. Thanks, Lester.
Thank you.
Okay, that's going to do it for this edition of the Wobcast. The Vikings play the Denver Broncos. The game is on Sunday at 3:25 Central Time. The game will be on Fox on TV. And, of course, the game will be on the Vikings Radio Network, where Paul Allen, Pete Bursich, and Greg Coleman will bring you the action. When you think Denver Broncos, you think offense with future Hall of Fame quarterback Peyton Manning throwing to a great cast of pass catchers. That includes Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders. But I caution you, take a look at Denver's defense, because they have been stealing the show in the Mile High City 3 weeks into the NFL's regular season. A great defense, a great overall defense. In fact, the number one defense when it comes to yards per game allowed, and a fantastic pass rushing defense with perhaps the best pass rushing duo in outside linebackers DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller. They have a very physical cornerback in Aqib Talib, who can nail it down on the outside, which gives that pass rush a little bit extra time. Great coaching staff with defensive coordinator Wade Phillips, and of course Gary Kubiak, who's a great offensive mind, and of course you have the sheriff, Peyton Manning, running the show on offense. So a very formidable foe coming up for the Minnesota Vikings. Again, that game is on Sunday. We're going to have more preview content of Vikings and Broncos in the next edition of the Wobcast later in the week, but that's not for now. That is for later. On behalf of producer Nate Vaughn, I'm your host, Mike Wobshaw. That will do it for this edition of the Wobcast. See you next time.